Hey, this is Lacey with SmartCast, and I'm joined today with Dr. Head, and he is a physician here in Birmingham, and he is going to join me today to talk about the MCELA and the benefits of pelvic floor health for women and do a little bit of education of why that's so important. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, when your precious daughter Olivia came to me this week and told me that you were interested in talking to me about this topic, I was so excited because there really isn't a lot of education around this. And I think I probably was made aware of Kegels and pelvic floor health, oddly enough, a couple of years ago by the Kardashians when they were all talking about doing Kegels. So it's kind of funny how we get our education on important things like this. So definitely think that you will have a lot more education to speak on when with this topic. So
it's one of those subjects that who thought it would take the Kardashians to be around, and there were medical specialties that had been trying to do this for years that can't get anywhere.
But leave it
and
to
then
the Kardashians.
Kardashians show up and everybody knows about it.
Right. Well, I mean, whatever it takes to get the conversation started, right?
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about your background and like what led you into pelvic floor health.
Well, my background is initially when I got out of medical school, I did an OBGYN residency. So, you know, I think I must have finished that in 93. I've done this, you know, for a while or whatever. And I used to always find it kind of interesting at childbirth, first of all, just what happens to the pelvic floor when you have childbirth. And sometimes it's can be tough on the pelvic floor, and then taking care of older women, you know, later who had had children 20 years ago and the problems that they had developed and then the link between them. Because I think the focus so long and a lot of things in healthcare was all about treating the problem. I used to say, I don't know why they call it healthcare. It's sick care. We didn't really worry about health. How do you maintain health? What do you do? We just treated the problems when they're there. And like most problems, it's better to try to prevent them for the patient than have to treat them once they are there. And even a lot of physicians, you know, there are even a lot of, you know, physicians, even OBGYN, that, you know, they don't think a lot about the pelvic floor. They have so many other things they have to think about and worry about. It's like, what do you do for pelvic floor health? Up until a few years ago, I can think of one pelvic floor physical therapist that was in Birmingham outside of UAB. UAB had some. They were the only one, you know, and so you didn't really have people to send people to. Nobody knew anything about it. I think there's a misconception out there that as physicians, we know everything. And there's days we think we do. But
it depends on who you talk to, right?
Exactly. But there's a lot of things that aren't, if you don't deal with it on a regular basis, it's kind of hard to keep expertise in that area.
Yeah. I can think of two pelvic floor specialists in Birmingham right now. And that's not a lot, really.
Now, you're talking about the
physical therapists that specialize in pelvic floor health. So, I mean, and they're, you know, just doing some exercises and things like that, but they don't even have tools like we have now.
Correct. There are more things that come out all the time to not just treat, try to maintain health in pelvic floor, but try to be less invasive in treating pelvic floor disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had the Vavi for a few years, and that's kind of what first introduced pelvic floor health to our practice. And then a couple of years ago, we brought in the MCELA chair, and that really opened up the floodgates because nobody really wanted to talk about pelvic floor health within our patient base. They all were just like, oh no, I don't have that problem, or no, oh no, like I'm not interested in that. But as soon as we brought in the chair, and it just made the conversation a lot easier because they were able to sit down fully clothed. Sometimes they didn't even know what they were doing. We were putting numbing on them. We were like, hey, sit down on this chair. And then it became a much more comfortable topic of conversation. And so now we can openly have the conversation with anybody and everybody all the time, thanks to the MCELA and how easy it is to use it and how beneficial it is for everybody. So it's made a big difference in the way that we can have conversations with our patient base now.
Well, we have a room in my office, and it's labeled pelvic floor rehab. And I tell patients that's not for an alcoholic pelvis. So it's, and we've had like machines, like I have a machine in my office where we can show people how to strengthen muscles. We can try to relax muscles. But in my office, you know, it's kind of an invasive machine. You know, right. It's not the most pleasant thing to go through or whatever, but it is necessary sometimes. You talked about Kegel exercises. When you look at most of the studies that have come out, almost every patient I talk to thinks they know how to do them. But when you look at the studies, 90% of women are doing them incorrectly. So if you've never really done it and you don't have the feel of it, you don't really know that you're doing it. As I tell patients, if anybody can look at you and tell you're doing it, you're not doing it right. You know, it shouldn't be, you know, falling to your feet and this kind of stuff, you know, when you're doing one. You should be able to do it calmly or whatever. Well, I think one advantage of some of these devices is when they sit there, oh, this is what it feels like to tighten my pelvic floor muscles. You know, a lot of times I've seen patients, they think they're doing Kegels and they're actually bearing down. I said, well, that's exactly opposite of what you should be doing. I think the beauty of your chair, the Amsella chair, I mean, it didn't have to be invasive. You can sit in the chair. I mean, it is a nice thing. And I think it's opening an awareness. And as more people do it, more people talk about it. And I'm sure there's like a lot of things that deal with in your aesthetic field or whatever, that you don't have to wait till something's a train wreck to do something about it. You know,
right.
You could even try to do it, say, hey, I'm not having any problems. I don't want any problems down the road. I want to see how to do this, how to do that correctly, and just kind of incorporate it into my regular health routine. But definitely, if they're having early symptoms, you know, don't wait till they get severe.
Right. And a lot of athletes have problems as well. And so starting out at an early age does make a difference. And we definitely at Smart Skin really encourage preventative care. And so this shouldn't be any exception to that as far as like preventing any future problems. Like my grandmother had to have the mesh for her bladder. And so like for me, I'd love to prevent that because I have 3 children and I don't want to have prolapse and have to have a sling or a mesh to hold my bladder up. So
it is a, you're right. Cause even when you look at prolapse, you know, I don't know if you remember, but you know, 10 years ago, there was all these commercials on TV. Have you had a vaginal mesh or sling? Call
right,
us.
Right. Yeah.
And they weren't from physicians. that, even then though, a traditional repair, traditional tissue repair back years ago, you know, some of them had a 50% failure rate at 1 year. I mean, that's not real good.
No, that,
you know,
it's not.
50%. And that's kind of where the meshes kind of came from. I don't know if you're aware of this, though. You can't get them anymore. They're no longer on the market.
So what are they doing now in place of that?
I think they most of them are traditional tissue repairs, but a few things happen. Slings are still out there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to that none of this applies to slings.
I think my grandmother has replaced the mesh with some sort of like disc of some sort. Does that make sense?
Like a
petri or petri dish or something. I don't know.
Oh, pessary.
Pessary dish. Yes.
Yes. So
is that the same thing?
A pessary is something you just do in the office. It's a little like rubber ring that you place inside to hold everything up. And I've got some patients that love it because especially patients that either they're not real active, they're kind of sedentary now. For a lot of reasons, they probably wouldn't be good surgical candidates because of their other health issues, the heart problems, this kind of stuff, age. I even have a few patients that would be symptomatic, but like say only when they're running. Well, you could teach them how to take this pessary in and out and put it in before they go running and then take it out, and they don't have to worry about it the rest of the day. Typically, if they're pretty active and young, I found they're not really happy having that thing in all day.
Right, yeah. They just need to come to the Amsella chair and be done with it.
Well, it is very important. You know, it's like when you just this morning, I've already done a couple of reconstructive, you know, cases where we get everything back up. But the question is, what do we do? You'll find that over time, most probably OBGYN doctors did pelvic prolapse surgery. Now you find it's pretty much just the urogynecologists that do pelvic prolapse. And as I tell people, it's not that I have some magic talent that people don't know about, but I do it all the time. And like anything, if you do a lot of it, you get a little bit better with it. But even those people, because like I said, if things are completely severely prolapsed at this point, that's what's talk about preventing them, you know, doing pelvic floor muscle therapy, it may pull it up a little bit, but if it's coming out a lot, it's not going to pull it out a lot. But I think it is so important after those surgeries, you need to get your pelvic muscles back in shape. Mm-hmm. If you had your knee operated on, you would expect to go to physical therapy after it was over with. But a lot of people just think that's a strange concept in this particular field. And as I've told them, surgery doesn't strengthen your muscles. It may get things back to where they were, but it doesn't improve your muscle function. And that all goes together. Function is as important as form, as I say, or whatever.
It's like kind of the same concept as I got a facelift, so now my skin quality is going to be improved. Like,
right.
You still have to do your skincare, just even though you got a facelift. It's like same concept.
Right, right. And so, you know, there can be a lot of issues that are caused by pelvic floor. And some of them, even with what I do, you'd be surprised how many people really don't even want to talk to me. If I don't drill down to, are you having this problem and this problem? And then sometimes they still don't want to answer. So when you talked about that, I mean, it's not unusual. You know, one of them that, you know, bladder leakage, people have a little more freedom to talk about it. You mm-hmm. get to the other end leakage, nobody wants to talk about it. And matter of fact, if you look at the studies, only 11% of women with that problem will ever bring it up to a doctor. Well, here's the issue. If they bring it up to their primary care doctor, gotta love them. They know a lot of things that I don't do. They have no idea. A lot of times they'll get referred for a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. They'll do a colonoscopy and tell them there's nothing wrong. Well, I'm glad they don't have a colon polyp or they don't have colon cancer, but I would beg to differ. Yes, there is a problem, but what the patients don't understand is a colonoscopy is not going to reveal that. I mean, that's the muscles on the outside. It's not, you can't see that. Colonoscopy, you're sedated. I mean, your muscles are relaxed anyway, so.
Yeah. So the primary care physicians are people that we need to be educating in this as well, it sounds like.
You know, I would say, yes, the importance of it, but primary care doctors, they have so much on their plates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are so many healthcare things. You know, I see patients that sometimes, you know, they want to come to us and say, well, my primary care doctor wouldn't refill my medicine because I wouldn't come in. And I'm saying, well, you realize your primary care doctor doesn't get paid if you don't come in or whatever. And they have to have people to fill this stuff out or whatever. But the things the insurance companies make them go through,
I tell people,
I said, I don't think there's enough money to make me do that. I mean, God love them. I could pick on them about maybe you should know more about this field, but they have to know so much. I'm going to cut them a little break, a little slack. But it would be nice because even if the patients knew where to go or they knew the importance of it or whatever, they don't, you know, because there's not really, like with pelvic floor health, there's not traditional medicines you're going to take or whatever. I mean, it's not like you could write them a prescription for a blood pressure medicine, like they got hypertension and treat it. I mean, it's a, you don't kind of use traditional types of medicine to make it better.
Right, yeah. And there are so many people that don't know that there's something that you can do for it, too, aside from just doing Kegels at home.
Well, another reason, as we talk about that, as I was thinking about medicines, pelvic floor health is so important to try to keep the muscle strong because, say, for instance, somebody that goes to the bathroom a lot, they have to urinate a lot. They have mm-hmm. to get up 3 or 4 times a night. They can barely make it to the bathroom on time. There are medications that may help that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a group of medications that have been out a long time, and they're called anticholinergics. They're called dry mouth, dry eyes, can cause constipation. But there's a lot of studies that came out lately that said if you take them for 3 years or longer, you increase your risk of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, study said 1 out of 16 people that take them for 3 years or longer may develop dementia from taking these medications that may not stop when you stop the medication or whatever. Now, you take a 40-year-old who's got these problems, chances are, if you just go the traditional medicine route, that they're going to be on them for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
You can walk into some issues with medications and, you know, than you can with a lot of things. And I'm going, hey, look, don't forget the basics. Don't forget the basics of pelvic floor health, you know, not, you know, eating and drinking things that aggravate your bladder. You know, what can you do short of medications and surgeries that help these problems?
So what do you recommend that people do? Like, so say we have somebody that comes in and does a series of the Imcella. It's twice a week for three weeks. For our traditional aesthetic services, not only are they coming in and having services done with me, but they have their at-home care with their skincare products. So, like, what would be the version of an at-home care for patients in between their visits?
Well, I would say the first thing, the Imcella for is the muscles go. They want to know what it feels like to do these things, do these muscle contractions at home. And by sitting in the Imcella chair, they ought to say, yeah, this is what it feels like. In other words, I think it helps. A lot of times what we do with that, we tell them to go home. We call it the 5-5-5-4. Tighten the muscles for 5 seconds and relax it for 5 seconds. Okay, that's 10 seconds. Do five of those in a row. 50 seconds, you've done the whole thing. And do it 4 times a day. You can do that at a traffic light. You can do it if you're waiting in line someplace. You know, you don't have to pull out a mat and spend an hour and a half on the floor every day focusing on your pelvic floor health. You know, because you can, I mean, you can overdo it. But then on top of that, there is a lot of times people classically called it the IC diet, the interstitial cystitis diet. But there's a list of things that you eat or drink that can aggravate your bladder. Now, we all know that caffeine can make us go to the bathroom a lot. I saw a patient yesterday who her complaint was she was getting up 3 to 4 times a night. And she told me she drank a lot of caffeine. I said, what time do you cut it off? Well, I probably make a pot, you know, after supper and probably drinking coffee up until the time I go to bed. That, I said, hey, why don't you try cutting it off at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe drink things that aren't caffeinated, and let's see what that can do. You can do bladder training things like, you know, try to go to the bathroom based on a clock, and you set it back first at a very early time. You may try to want to add 15 minutes a week to it. So there's some small things like that you can do for bladder, you know, for bladder function or whatever. Don't misunderstand me. I use medication sometimes or whatever, but so many people never have the conversation. I say a lot of healthcare providers, they don't have the conversations with them about their pelvic floor health, what kind of things they can do to help these symptoms or whatever, which is part of what we do when somebody first comes in. We measure muscle strength and teach them how to do it, go over the list of things that aggravate their bladder and what can they do. And then sometimes you may have to move on to some medications.
And so how much does the poor pelvic floor health have to do with, like, painful intercourse and things like that?
Okay. Number one, several things can happen. And let's lump it into two categories, weak pelvic muscles and then tight pelvic muscles. And first of all, as I tell everybody, hey, Halloween just passed. I said, think of a skeleton for a minute. When you look at the pelvis and a skeleton, it looks like a basketball goal. So the point is, how come everything doesn't fall out? Because obviously bones aren't holding them up. I said, but think of the ring up there at the pelvis as like the top of a basket. And you have all these things that come down and they weave between each other and they hold everything up. And in a female, three things go through them, the bladder, the vagina, and the rectum. But these muscles are different than other muscles in your body because, like your arm muscle, when you're not using your arm muscle, it's not contracted, it's loose. Pelvic muscles stay contracted. And if they didn't, your bladder would be leaking, everybody's would probably develop prolapse issues. They would have a hard time keeping bowel movements in or whatever. So they relax when you're going to the bathroom, you're having intercourse, you're having a baby, you're having bowel movements. That's when the muscles are supposed to relax. Mm-hmm. So, number one, if you have weak pelvic muscles and you've had them for a long period of time, and it's led to prolapse, things are kind of falling down. So if they're trying to have intercourse, sometimes things are getting pushed back up, you know, it's uncomfortable, whatever. So that can be an issue with sexual functioning with weak pelvic muscles. And then I also like to say, though, a weak pelvic muscle is more prone to get pulled. So now if you, say, pull something in your back or pull something in your arm and you were using that muscle constantly, you really wouldn't be surprised that it wasn't getting better. But people don't think about muscles in the pelvis. So then sometimes what can happen, the muscles are too tight anyway, they're irritated, and then you almost develop, we call it this dyssynergic response. Instead of relaxing, they're getting tighter. Mm-hmm. So now you already had a muscle that was sore, it just got tighter, and the pain can just be unbearable sometimes, because then what happens when you hurt, it gets even tighter. And so it gets into the spiral that won't get better. So it's kind of important with pelvic floor muscle health that first you've got to get the tightness and tenderness to go away. Then you want to focus on what can I do to keep from getting back into the shape, which may include pelvic floor muscle exercises. But you do not do those. You don't do pelvic floor muscle exercises while you're tight. You know, the muscles are tight and tender. You've got to relax them first.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what would you say for a patient, for example, that has a chronic cough, that she is super dry because she's taking medication for a cough all the time, and painful intercourse because of the dryness and because of the muscles being so sore down there?
A couple of things. Number one, with a chronic cough, you know, anything we do that increases our interabdominal pressure mm-hmm. increases the pressure that's put on the pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. So number one, if your muscles are weak, they really almost can't, they don't do a good job of countering or fighting back against that coughing. So if somebody knows they're going to have a coughing fit, if they learn how to tighten their pelvic floor muscles and they reflexively tighten them and hold them when they're coughing, that will help some of the muscle weakness issues. The other thing is, obviously, you got to see if their muscles are tender all the time or is it just when they cough and sneeze. But the other thing that happens, as I tell people, especially when you're talking about vaginal health, I said, first of all, think of a 9-year-old girl that hasn't been through puberty, and we're talking about the pelvic region. And then think of a full-grown woman. What's the difference? Hormones kicked in and started working. Well, the average age of menopause for them to stop, your ovaries to stop functioning, is about 50. But you can have some declining hormone issues even before you get to that point. And all those changes start to revert back. You know, the tissue gets very dry, it gets very thin, it becomes very uncomfortable. So another thing, even though I told you medicines aren't always the answer, estrogen vaginal cream. Now, notice mm-hmm. I didn't say an estrogen pill, I didn't say an estrogen shot, I didn't say an estrogen patch. Now, if you need those for other reasons,
right,
it may take care of that too. But it helps the vaginal health. The other thing they get into that I deal with a lot is when the hormones start to go away, there's bacteria that lives in the vagina anyway.
Right.
It's there. You can't get rid of it. But when the hormones start going away, the type of bacteria that live in your vagina, we call it the microbiome, starts to change. And there's a lot of unfriendly bacteria that come in that love to cause bladder infections. Mm. So some of these people sometimes who have recurrent urinary tract infections, could be from, you know, pelvic floor health, you know, muscle strength health, but could also be because they're anti-estrogenic. Sometimes putting them on estrogen cream, as I say, gets the good neighbors to move back in, the good bacteria to move back in, and they may be at less risk of developing you know, urinary tract infection. So in a lot of these people, I think it's, in that particular example, make sure your muscles are in good shape, but also make sure, you know, for lack of a better word, the vagina, like the skin, that it's in good shape. Mm-hmm. And probably estrogen vaginal cream is going to do as good as anything out there to reverse those changes.
And would she be a good candidate for something like the Imcella chair?
Oh, if she had, yes. If she had weak muscles, absolutely. I actually probably think most people are a good candidate to go through it, you know, a time or two. Then if you maintain your muscle health, that's fine. But it is, and it's the thing that people seem to be the most reluctant about that we do. You know, they would almost rather me say, we're going to do this big exotic surgery for all this period of time, then, hey, maybe we need to focus on pelvic floor muscle strength. I think part of that is your whole life, you know, when you've gone to the doctor, you got a prescription, you got antibiotics, you got a shot.
Quick fix.
But I think medicine, in a lot of ways, it's kind of changing, even some of the modalities that are out there. And, you know, pelvic floor health is really, it's kind of a lifetime thing. It's not a short-term. Now, have I seen a few people that, you know, they may have slipped and fallen on a boat dock or something and have all this pain that, yeah, usually you stem, we call it stemming, but you do constant stimulation of the pelvis to get those muscles to relax. You do that two or three times and they're fine. But most of these people are coming in, these are chronic issues they're dealing with. This is not something that's going to go away in a visit or two.
Right. Well, and one of the other good things about the Imcella chair, too, is that it helps with blood flow. And so it's going to help with hydration and make, you know, sexual intercourse more comfortable because of that as well. So are they getting that type of blood flow by doing Kegels at home as well? Or is it just like kind of a minor version of that?
You know, I don't think just the Kegels at home, to be honest with you, are going to help the blood flow mm-hmm. as much. I think the Imcella chair is kind of like blasted it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's kind yeah. of like, it kind of like wakes it up real quick or whatever. And yeah. that's going to be hard to do doing a 5-5-5-4 mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, because the Imcella is 11,000 Kegels in 28 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of Kegels.
Yes. I wonder if anybody could do that without the chair.
I guess they could, but that would
yeah.
that'd be hard.
Yes. And so, and I think just the nature of how they work or whatever, and that it improves blood flow or whatever. Don't ask me the physics of the exact stimulation to the Imcella. It goes the muscles to yeah. contract or whatever, but
yeah, you know what's crazy, too, is I've said this many times on our podcast, but the Imcella is the one treatment that I can't prove to people that it worked because you obviously can't do before and after pictures of it, but it's the one treatment that I get so much feedback about patients being so happy with their results. Like, there's not one Imcella patient that we've had that's like, you know what, I just don't really think that worked.
You know, the interesting when you talk about studies, because in medicine, you know, they're all about studies. You know, they're all about, is this FDA approved?
The
FDA, you've got to have a lot of studies mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think some things are a little bit common sense. Mm-hmm. I tell everybody, I said, there's a lot of things we tell people to do that there's not a lot of necessarily studies on. Well, number one, there's not a company that's making a medication who's going to make a lot of money if they prove that it works or whatever. So nobody wants to spend the money to do those studies. But I asked my patients sometimes about that. I said, how many of y'all have ever seen the parachute study? And they look at me funny. I said, what do you mean? I'm saying, well, to really prove it scientifically, we need to kick half the people out of the airplane with parachutes and half without, and then compare how they did. So it's not really, you know, they're kind of hard to do, if it makes any sense or whatever, because the classic randomized controlled trial, if you can put half of them in the chair and not turn it on, and half in the chair to turn it on, do you not think the people, when you don't turn it on, are going to know that it wasn't turned on? So it would be hard to get. And then part of the issues is some of these studies, you know, the health benefits may not necessarily be tomorrow. They may not be next week. They may not be next month, unless they're already having symptoms. It's the pelvic health 20 years down the road. Well, you think about how long that study is. I mean, even if you enrolled it completely on the first day, it's going to take 20 years to complete that study. So I do think there's more information that goes on in that area that's going on. It just may be a while before it comes out. But then if somebody's having mild issues, what are the alternatives? I just talked about, you know, medications that can have some unpleasant side effects or whatever. Don't misunderstand me. I do surgery for a living, but I mean, if you can find an easier way to do it besides me operating on you, that's probably better than having to go that route. And so to me, the MCELA would be cost effective. I know you probably get into an issue sometimes, but surgery is covered by insurance and it's not. And, you know, I said I didn't make the rules. I didn't decide what was and what wasn't. But no, I think pelvic floor, like I had mentioned, you know, obviously I must think it's important because I've got something in my office. And pretty much all urogynecologists that I know would tell you the same thing, that specialize in these areas, that pelvic floor health is important. They're either going to show you how to strengthen the muscles and help those in the office. And then if you get the hang of it, maybe that's all you need. Or if you need more help, you probably need to see the pelvic floor physical therapist. So it's pretty much kind of ingrained. It's not really a new concept. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, generally speaking, probably not being in their offices, you would never know it. Because remember, even a pelvic floor physical therapist, I think I'm correct in the fact, you can't just walk in off the street and get your insurance to cover it. You've got to be referred by a physician. So if you think, you know, there may be...
Typically, yes, unless they're cash pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 6 to 8 urogynecologists in Birmingham or whatever, and there may be a few other people that refer to them too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so how do you... You see what I mean? There's a bottleneck right there is what I'm trying to say.
No, for sure. So with our protocol, it's twice a week for 3 weeks. And then for maintenance, it really varies on the person. They can either come once a month for treatment, once a quarter for a treatment, just based on their specific, you know, needs. Would you think that that would be acceptable? Or how often do you think they need to maintain it?
I would probably say that, to me, it's something you would almost evaluate every quarter. You know, after they did it, I'd probably say you want to do it probably once a month for the first at least quarter. Then maybe you could do it once a quarter. It really kind of depends on how their symptoms, have they got the hang of it, how is their muscle strength? Because I think the longer they do it, the better their strength is going to be. But what you don't want to do is you're going to go do the MCELA chair, any kind of pelvic floor rehab. You do it one time. You never do anything in between. To think that it's still going to be working 20 years later is probably not the case. It's going to go right back to what it was before. So, you know, I think probably kind of the more you've done it, you know, the longer it'll last, but it's not going to last forever. So I would say in the ideal world, you know, you'd probably never spread out more than every 6 months, but, you know, and it depends. Some people might be slower. They may need to do it every month for 6 months or a year or whatever. You would hope at some point, if they weren't getting better after that, it's like, well, maybe you do need a pelvic floor physical therapist who may have more tricks. As I tell patients, I said, listen, I appreciate what the pelvic floor physical therapist does, and I don't have all the tricks they have in the office, and that's why we like send people to them. But not everybody, I think, has to get to that particular level.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have 3 children. I did 2 rounds, one on the U1 protocol, one on the U2. Then I maintained after that probably once a month, and now I'm down to like once a quarter.
Yeah.
And so I know when it's time to do a maintenance treatment. Like, I can just tell.
Yeah.
If I sneeze and I'm like, ooh, it's time to do MCELA again.
Right. You know, and then I guess the issue is they say, okay, well, what does he mean by pelvic floor disorders? Well, pain, things falling out, you know, leaking urine when you laugh, cough, and sneeze, having to get up 4 or 5 times a night, you know, having to, you know, I can't get the bathroom quick enough when I have to go, you know, like I said, I can't have intercourse. It's uncomfortable or whatever. I have a hard time controlling my bowel movements. You know, we could talk about all kinds of tricks I have for all of those, but you really don't want to know that if you don't. You don't want to get there if you don't have to.
Right. Well, I mean, and the cool thing about the MCELA, too, is that it's not just for women. It actually is FDA cleared for erectile dysfunction for men as well.
You know, and you think of a lot of things. Now, obviously, I just deal with women, but you think of men, you think of prostate cancer.
Oh, yeah.
in the surgery they go through, I'm going, it seems like those people would need pelvic floor muscle strengthening.
They do.
Too.
My stepdad, about 2 years ago, had prostate cancer and bladder cancer, actually. So he had to have his prostate, his bladder, he had to get the Neo bladder, and he did some Imcella treatments.
You know, there, like I said, years ago, even when we were going to these courses and they were talking about pelvic floor muscle strengthening and the pelvic floor rehab, they did talk about me, and I'll be honest, since I don't see any of them, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention. That's when I go out for a coffee break, you know, but they were talking about the leakage, you know, like after prostate, you know, surgery, they can have a little leakage or whatever, that it really helps.
So yeah, they have to learn how to like control their bladder and when to go to the bathroom and when not to. I mean, it's a whole thing for men too after that
and,
surgery.
And then sometimes what'll happen in healthcare that gets frustrating, somebody just hands them a sheet and here, do this. And I'm going, until you've done it a few times, it really doesn't seem to make sense. But I would imagine, kind of even in men, unless people do a lot of it, they don't really have that expertise around to help people with those particular problems and knowledge or whatever, in which case a pelvic floor physical therapist also can see more than just women or whatever. They can see, you know, they can see men or whatever, because take off the, you know, male, female anatomic parts, you know, there's slightly different shapes in the pelvis, which I'm sure lead to unique issues or not, but pelvic floor is the same.
Right.
Now, generally, men don't have to worry about going through childbirth, you know, and the damage that it can, you know, cause. I just, like I said, just think about carrying a baby for 9 months. Let's even take the labor process out of it.
Oh, yeah.
That weight on your pelvic floor for 9 months, and you said you've done it three times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's 2.5 years of weight on your pelvic floor.
And three vaginal births. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, It takes a toll on your body, for sure.
It does. And so, you know, men probably don't have as many problems unless they've had, you know, they have to have extensive bladder surgery or prostate surgery. But that doesn't mean they couldn't get it. You know, I'm sure men can get problems with their pelvic floor muscle spasm, too. So,
yeah. So we used to sell an at-home device called Apex. What are your thoughts on, like, home devices for?
And I was trying to think, is Apex, is that the one had a little device that kind of went inside, and you can tell by your phone if you're if you're moving it at the right angle?
So this one at the time did not have an app, you know, that it would correspond with. It was just an internal, you just put it in, it had the little electrode on it, and it would do Kegels for you at home.
They, yeah, give me why if you tell me that. Yes, I think I know. There's been so many things that have come out, and I get them confused sometimes by the names.
Yeah, there's some new ones that have come out recently, too.
But I think that's good for people with weak pelvic muscles. But then again, we were talking about when muscles are tight, when they're tender, if you have a patient who's having pain with intercourse or whatever, that's not the device for them, because that's intermittent stim, and it's working that muscle. It's not doing a constant stim to relax it. But I think for people that had, you know, maybe they got mild stress incontinence or urge incontinence, if that's what it takes to get them to do the exercises, I think they're great. It's, you know, if somebody, can they do it on their own? They can, but they've got to do it. In other words.
Yeah. So another thing, too, is the Imcella and our BTL MFM360, they both treat stress urinary incontinence and urgent urinary incontinence.
Right.
Do you want to explain the difference between those two?
Yes. First of all, stress incontinence is, and I laugh to tell patients, I don't mean you're stressed and then you're in the corner freaking out. It's anything that increases your abdominal pressure, like coughing, sneezing, jumping, laughing, exercise. I basically say think of it as activity incontinence, when you're up and about or whatever. Well, what causes stress incontinence, first of all, think of the bladder. Think of a water balloon for a minute, okay? Mm-hmm. You've got the stem of the water balloon, and then you got the big part where the water is held or whatever. Stress incontinence is usually an anatomic problem, and it's an issue that occurs where the stem, you know, typically where it goes into the bladder, which is called the urethra, typically goes in at an angle. And I tell people, that's like going out in your yard and kinking that hose pipe a little bit. You know, it's going to slow down that flow. That angle helps keep you continent. when you laugh, cough, or sneeze, this thing drops down and becomes a straight pipe. Straight pipes leak. So that's what stress incontinence is. So why the Imcella helps that? By strengthening the pelvic floor, it may be strengthening what's under this, and it's not coming all the way down like this. It's coming like
more
this.
At an angle. Yeah.
Now, so urge incontinence is not stress incontinence. When we think about the balloon again, it's when this balloon is squeezing when it's not supposed to. Because if you think about it, normally when you go to the bathroom, your bladder gets full. It's like, gosh, maybe I need to go. You go to the restroom. You sit down. Signal goes to the brain. Okay, it's okay to go. Sends the signal down, and that bladder will contract. And this is supposed to relax. That's a whole nother issue about urinary retention that can also occur with pelvic floor disorders.
Yeah.
And this will relax, and you empty your bladder. Well, remember, the bladder in and of itself has no support. It's a floppy bag with muscles in the wall of it. It sits on a shelf, and I say that shelf is the top wall of the vagina that's attached to muscles and pelvic floor muscles or whatever. So if you've got subtle degrees of prolapse and this thing isn't supported very well, it gets mad and irritated, and this starts contracting. So by improving the health of the shelf that it's sitting on, you can decrease your contraction strength. And there are a lot of women that can have trouble with pelvic floor that actually have both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I found if you talk to them, one may bother them worse than the other, but it's pretty rare somebody comes in and doesn't have both.
Right.
So that's kind of how it kind of helps that. Just like when we talked about things that you eat and drink that aggravate your bladder. They're not going to help stress incontinence. I mean, stress incontinence is a support issue, and you can drink coffee all day long, and it hadn't made that support issue worse. But it's put this more on edge, this up here, the part of the bladder that squeezes when you have urge incontinence. So generally, those issues are the issues. Urge incontinence are the issues that are made better sometimes by water you eat or drink. You know, your bladder is a very sophisticated neurologic issue. Like, I'm sure anybody's ever had a cold. You know how cold medicine can aggravate your bladder. A lot of people, if they pay attention next time when they take cold medicine, see how they feel like they may have more time emptying their bladder or whatever, or they have to go more often, or their stream seems weaker or whatever. Now, thank goodness that's something they're just taking short term, but
right.
There's all kinds of problems that it can create.
I'm sure that there are lots of medications that can create issues with bladder.
There are. Some of them are obvious. You know, I had a patient several years ago that was in her early 90s. And I thought this woman, and she's very bright. She seemed like she was with it. And her only complaint to me was she got up 6 times a night to go to the bathroom. And you get up that much at night, you don't really get a good sleep. It can affect your health, your mental well-being, and
absolutely.
Everything else. She was on a Lasix, which is a pretty strong diuretic. Now, mm-hmm. if I ask her once, I ask her 20 times, when do you take the Lasix? I take it in the morning. Well, we tried to, you know, do a lot of conservative things that we talked about, pelvic floor muscle strengthening. We did this. We tried her on some medicines. Nothing's getting better. So we decide we're going to do urodynamics, which is kind of a little bit a test that we do to try to make your bladder leak to see where the problem is. You know, fluid goes from high pressure to low pressure. I mean, what's the issue? And then her daughter came with her. Nobody had ever been with her before. Mm-hmm. And she looked right at me right before we did this test. You think it's that Lasix she takes right before bedtime?
Oh, my gosh.
I said, you know what? I don't think we need to do this test. Let's just take that Lasix in the morning or whatever. But that's an extreme example. But,
yeah.
Yes, there's all kinds of medicines that can affect your bladder function. If you look at the side effect of medicines, it'd be probably hard to find one that the bladder wasn't in there. But the issue you get with sometimes, okay, what do you do? If somebody comes to me on their own medication that can aggravate the bladder, but they're on it for their heart or something else, am I going to tell them to quit taking it so their bladder will be fine?
Yeah.
So that's why you've got to kind of, you know, play the hand that you're dealt, so to say. But like I said, pelvic floor muscle therapy hasn't hurt any of that. They can do that. They can do that. Maybe they don't have to stop their medications or whatever. So we try to keep that in mind with our patients because you're more than if all I'm thinking about what's best for your bladder, and I don't look at the whole picture that's there, then sometimes I'm being kind of very short-sighted. And how does it impact them? You know, we see so many sometimes, say, patients, they're, say, a little older, their kids have moved off, and they're so embarrassed about their pelvic floor dysfunction, they won't go anywhere anymore. Say they don't go to church, which was their social connection or whatever. They won't go on trips because they're afraid on the trip they're going to have to go to the bathroom and they're not going to find one or whatever. This can cause some significant issues. And we feel like somebody's not better until we can get them to do the things that they weren't doing, that their pelvic floor is not dictating everything else that they can do.
Well, and it's one of the primary reasons as to why most seniors end up in healthcare facilities, like long-term healthcare facilities.
I say sometimes kind of ugly. I said, but if Meemaw starts peeing and pooping on the furniture, they're going to move her out and move her to the thing.
I mean, it's a big deal.
And don't miss it. And I'm not picking on nursing homes or long-term care facilities, but they don't help people with this.
No.
I mean, like many things, they're chronically understaffed or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's tragic sometimes. Like, did anybody ever try to do something before we got that way, whatever? Right. I had a friend of mine that several years ago asked me to see his mother. She was in, I think, an assisted living facility, but she was having trouble with bowel continence. And they said they could no longer take care of her. They were going to have to put her in a nursing home because that, you know, even then it moves you to a different level or whatever.
Right, yeah, for sure.
And she tried some conservative things, and we actually did something called sacral neuromodulation, which is like a pacemaker for the bowel and bladder function or whatever, to put it in. Unfortunately, it didn't work. It helped her bladder great, but her bowels were still kind of issues. And she'd gotten to the point she needed some help ambulating or whatever, but she was too embarrassed to ask. You know, it's just like nice Southern ladies, not supposed to ask for help. But it was just, anyway, she ended up in the nursing home anyway. But yes, he came to me for that very reason. That was the reason they were going to move her. I think I'm thinking assisted living, right? Those different levels. But anyway, they were moving her to the higher level to a nursing home, all because of a continence issue, not because a cognitive issue, not because she couldn't move around. I mean, she was slow. But otherwise, if she did not have the bowel issue, they would never have talked about moving her.
Yeah. It's sad when it comes to that too. The makers of our Imcella do our Imsculpt Neo, and they have this whole like quarter floor treatment protocol. So it does help prevent falls too, because it helps with stability whenever you treat their abdomen or their glutes and their pelvic floor as well. And it just is going to help with overall comprehensive and preventative falling and all in all, keep them out of the nursing homes as long as possible.
Well, and you think that, especially sometimes, you know, say like an older population that is, you know, getting nursing home age, think about what a fall risk is when you're getting up 4 to 6 times a night to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
I don't know if you've ever sprung out of the bed in the middle of the night all of a sudden, but it's like sometimes your feet hit the floor too fast to let your balance catch up with it or whatever. Yes. I mean, it is significant because I'll talk to patients, you know, that a lot of them, thank goodness, haven't been hurt, but they will fall trying to get out of bed and go to the bathroom because it's like they wake up and it's urgent. I've got to go now. Right. I can't wait. I have got to go. And, of course, they don't want to have an accident, so they're trying to rush to the bathroom. And as I tell people, sometimes you buy somebody a minute. It's the difference between being continent and not being continent.
Mm-hmm. And so on the flip side of that, post-pregnancy, how soon after having a baby would you recommend that ladies get started doing something
I would probably say, hey, look, go to your 6-week postpartum exam, make sure everything's fine, everything's healed from the delivery, but I think then you start then or whatever. You know, we have a few times, I've had a few patients sit to me from my partners that we're having significant issues that we may have started quicker if we thought everything was okay. Mm-hmm. But I say, I would go through it whether I thought I was having any problems or not, because it's not going to hurt anything.
Right.
In other words, it's, well, I was talking about risk and benefits. Mm-hmm. The benefit is, hey, I may prevent these problems. My pelvic floor will be stronger. What is the risk?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the risk is extremely low, if not non-existent in this particular thing. So I don't understand why people don't do it more. I can tell you that, you know, I'm old enough that have nieces, you know, or nephews, and, you know, having kids, and I tell them all, you need to come see Angie in my office about, you know, 6 weeks after you deliver. And, you know, so you don't have to worry about me busting in there in the door or whatever. You'll be in there with Angie. But you need to know how to strengthen these things.
Yeah. I mean, and with the chair, too, I mean, we can always start at a lower setting.
Yeah.
Especially that soon postpartum.
Right. Because I guess you want to make sure, and I'd probably say the first time they do it, I'd say get it on a low setting, make sure when they do it, they're not having pain for some mm-hmm. reason, and then subtle chair pointed out that, hey, you still got an issue right here or whatever.
Right.
But then again, I mean, I'm assuming, because I've never done it, but can you turn the therapy up while the therapy is going on?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And I say you start on the lowest setting and just slowly turn it up.
And that's the that's how we do it anyways, is we start at a lower setting and then we gradually titrate it up to their comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't have any issues going up to 100%, but we definitely have some that stay a little bit lower, closer to the 60 to 80%.
Right. And I would say, you know, especially somebody who we said we'd work through that pelvic floor tenderness, mm-hmm. that's probably also the one you will say, hey, look, we're going to keep it on the low level and mm-hmm. we're not going to go all the way up to the max this first time to see what it does. And the other thing that I would recommend is don't do it 2 or 3 days in a row. Twice a week is great. Separate it by a few days. Get through it. Get a chance for your muscles to recover. Mm-hmm. And then go back and do it again. Otherwise, you're just going to create a lot of soreness, and you're going to think it doesn't work. You're going to be upset.
Fatigue that muscle, and then you'll have it'll go backwards. It'll go the opposite way of how you want it to go.
Yes.
So, was there any other advice that you would have for ladies listening about their pelvic floor health? Anything else that you want to add to the discussion that we've had so far today?
I would just tell women to understand how important it is. And if, you know, we already talked about my recommendation, if you've had a baby that, yes, about 6 weeks out, you get that done or whatever. But I would also say even the mildest subtle form of, well, I just leaked, I just leak every now and then when I laugh, cough, and sneeze. Well, great. You may not need to come see me and have some big incontinence procedure done. Get your pelvic floor muscles in shape, and maybe you won't have that at all. If you have urge issues, and then again, I'd say they're on the mild to moderate range. We call it tier one therapy first. Tier one's muscle strengthening, like I said, avoiding the things that aggravate your bladder, bladder training. Get on that stuff immediately. You know, you feel pressure, you know, just walking around. That could be a sign of early subtle prolapse. Tighten up your pelvic muscles or whatever. Because with prolapse, there's tightening up your pelvic muscles. There's doing nothing. It may not get worse. The point of that is, you know, if somebody doesn't have bad prolapse and they do nothing, it may not progress, but it might. Pelvic floor muscle strengthening, pessaries, and I can promise you probably, unless you're older and very sedentary, you're probably not going to like pessaries. I can probably think of, under the age of 80, a handful of patients I have that have pessaries and like them. You know, over 80, I've got a whole lot.
My grandmother's over 80,
And I, you know, if they have, you know, we talked about sexual dysfunction. Remember, there's pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, if your muscles are real weak, it's just, you know, all that laxity, they lack any sensation. You know, I had a patient one time came in with bad prolapse, and you can edit this out if you have to edit it out or whatever. But, you know, I asked her about sexual function, you have pain. She said, no, but it's like throwing a biscuit down the hallway. I don't know. But no, so her issues, she had pain, but she had so much, her muscles were so weak, she had so much laxity, she had no sensation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And you may think that's exactly on the opposite end of pain, but it still is a problem. So that can occur too, and the MCL chair would be great for people like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would not have thought that muscle laxity would have prevented sensation in that way.
But I'll never forget that quote. That's a quote I still use all the time. That was hers, not mine.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on here and talking with me today about women's health. And anybody that you want to send our way for the MCELA, feel free. And anybody that needs surgery, we'll send them your way.
Well, I appreciate it. And any way I can help or people have questions, just, you know, holler at us. You know, we're there. But like I said, we want to prevent people from having to see people like me.
Yeah, that's the goal. So, well, thank you for joining us on today's episode of SmartCast, and we'll see you next week.